Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 18th of February. When we were at the Democratic debate last Thursday here in Milwaukee, we were surprised to hear his name not only mentioned, but strong disagreement concerning his foreign policy judgment. Hillary Clinton said that former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger would send her acute observations about foreign leaders and written reports on his travels. She said, "Henry Kissinger is a friend, and I relied on his counsel when I served as Secretary of State." Bernie Sanders said, "I'm proud to say Henry Kissinger is not my friend. He was one of the most destructive Secretaries of State in the modern history of this world." So we thought we would talk about Henry Kissinger this hour. Is his advice to be valued by presidential candidates? Does it transcend partisan differences? Does what he did as Secretary of State have any bearing on how the world is now in 2016? We'll have two guests with us during the course of this hour, starting with Professor Luke Nichter. He's Associate Professor of History at Texas A&M University. He is a noted expert on the Nixon tapes, the author of Richard Nixon and Europe, The Reshaping of the Postwar Atlantic World, based on multilingual archival research in six countries. Also, he's co-author of the Nixon Tapes, 1971 to 1972, and also another book on the Nixon Tapes, 1973. He's founding executive producer of C-SPAN's American History TV, and he has written about Henry Kissinger extensively, so we will talk with him later in the hour. Todd Gitlin, professor of sociology and journalism at Columbia University, author of The 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage. He wrote an opinion piece that appeared in the New York Times saying that Kissinger was a courtier to atrocity. So we'll be welcoming your phone calls as well as we talk about Henry Kissinger this hour of the program. Here's how you reach our conversation. It's 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Before we meet our first guest, let's hear what prompted today's conversation. This is Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders at the Democratic debate here in Milwaukee last week as they sparred over Kissinger's legacy.
In the last debate, I believe in her book, very good book, by the way, in her book and in this last debate, she talked about getting the approval or the support or the mentoring of Henry Kissinger. Now, I find it rather amazing because I happen to believe that Henry Kissinger was one of the most destructive secretaries of state in the modern history of this country. I am proud to say that Henry Kissinger is not my friend. I will not take advice from Henry Kissinger. And in fact, Kissinger's actions in Cambodia, when the United States bombed that country, overthrew Prince Sihanouk, created the instability for Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge to come in, who then butchered some 3 million innocent people, one of the worst genocides in the history of the world. So count me in as somebody who will not be listening to Henry Kissinger.
Well, I know journalists have asked who you do listen to on foreign policy, and we have yet to know who that is.
Well, it ain't Henry Kissinger, that's
fine.
For sure.
That's fine.
And joining us the first part of the hour is Professor Luke Nichter, and we thank you very much for joining us. Who'd have thought Henry Kissinger began, and then everybody wrote about the fact that they were debating about Henry Kissinger. He's still a guy who people pay attention to in 2016, Professor.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
And I think you're exactly right. You know, name me one other 90-year-old who last served in government in the 1970s. Who resonates so much today in our political system. So he really is in a category all on his own.
Were you surprised that he figured it so prominently in that debate?
Well, I think everybody was. And I think both candidates there in the clip are playing to their particular audience. I think for Senator Sanders to say what he did, I think he knows exactly the position he staked in the election here. And I think that's the message that has resonated so much with his supporters.
Mm-hmm. I guess you also have to ask how many people in the audience actually remember Henry Kissinger.
Well, sure, or the reference to Cambodia, which is even
yes.
more obscure. I mean, when I teach, a lot of my students are kind of in that 18 to 20-year-old range, and for them, I mean, they have no memory of 9/11. Richard Nixon is just as ancient as the American Civil War. I think you have to keep in mind what this next generation knows. They know things that are a lot different than the way that we know them.
Mm-hmm. You have written that we are divided on Kissinger's legacy because he remains so relevant today. How so?
Well, I think we remain divided because it's hard to have the final say on someone like Henry Kissinger because many of the records are still being released. We still have 700 hours of Nixon tapes yet to be released. It's more than Kennedy and Johnson recorded together, total. Many of his archival papers have not been released. It takes many decades to declassify sensitive government records. And if there's one thing, whether you support Kissinger or not, many of the things he was involved in were sensitive by definition. So I think we will continue to learn a lot more about him and about the Nixon presidency. I don't know if it will change a lot of minds. But I think for that reason, you know, as the National Archives continues to release more records, and I've been a part of a lot of this effort, we are continuing to learn a lot of new things. And so we have to keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm. He made reference to the American bombing campaign that was kept secret from Americans, and Bernie Sanders talked about the genocidal Khmer Rouge. Do the tapes that you have studied in your study of Kissinger center on that at all? Did he talk about that with Nixon?
He does to some degree. You know, taping existed from, it wasn't Nixon's entire presidency, it was from February of 71 until July of 73, when during Watergate they had to pull the plug on the system because they were essentially creating more evidence that could be used against the Nixon White House. The bulk of the Cambodian operations were the year before in 70, so we don't have those taped. And then the fall of Cambodia and the rise of the Khmer Rouge was in the mid-70s when there were no tapes under Nixon and then Ford. So we don't have the heart of the issue recorded, but we do have, in that 71 to 73 time period, reflections on what was done in Cambodia the year before. So kind of, you know, at second hand and through their memories, you know, we do have a little bit, but we're missing a lot of the story.
Mm-hmm. So is it a good thing to do to accept the advice of former Secretary of State who were Secretaries of State during pretty big times in American history? Or is there a political element that rightfully should be brought to bear, do you think, here, that some of these Secretaries of State were so controversial? And I think that specifically Sanders is centering in on the Vietnam era. He was others have talked about the opening of China, which is very much lauded. Does it make sense to look at who you keep as counsel when you were Secretary of State?
Well, I was watching the debate, and I heard this kind of on live television. I was surprised on the one hand, Senator Sanders' remarks, but that Hillary Clinton herself had said these things. And I think what I thought at that moment in my head was clearly she's not endorsing his politics, Kissinger's politics, Nixon's politics. Let's not forget that Hillary Clinton was a young attorney of age 26 on the House Judiciary Committee that led the impeachment against Nixon. So her political stand against Nixon and Kissinger has been well known for 40 years. But what I thought as I was watching the debate is clearly there must be some kind of kinship of those who have occupied the seventh floor of the State Department, regardless of your political party over the years. I think much like the presidency, we've seen recently Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush have worked together on a number of causes. So I think for those who have shared that seat, so to speak, I think they do appreciate each other's counsel, even in the case where they do have political differences. And I do think that makes our system stronger.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the fact that we like to overly idealize our leaders. We like to think they're John F. Kennedy. And then you go on to say, but they're really much more like Richard Nixon or Henry Kissinger.
Well, you know, I think people have idealized this. You know, when you look at the Watergate period in particular, people were so shocked when the first Nixon tape transcripts were published, first in the courts and the Watergate inquiries, and then later by the New York Times, with all of these expletive deleted
mm-hmm.
in them. And people could only imagine, what are they saying? I mean, the Oval Office is kind of a sacred place where our president shouldn't be using these kinds of words. And I think, that, again, going back to the 18 to 20-year-olds, I think they have a totally different view. I mean, they kind of assume almost anything goes. We've had plenty of salty people, from Rahm Emanuel to Dick Cheney in the Oval Office in the last couple of presidencies, and I think now the veil has surely been lifted.
Mm-hmm. And now we have the salty Donald Trump.
Well, I think even for many Republicans, whether or not one is a competent executive, and you could put Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, I think, in that category, I think there's something about the uncivility of politics really being more uncivil than it ever has been when you consider the possibility of a Trump presidency. And I think it's in part what concerns many Republicans.
Mm-hmm. What about the relationship between Nixon and Kissinger? Did he take his advice on... was it Kissinger really who went to China and had secret meetings with the Chinese leadership, and so Nixon was following Kissinger's advice, or did Kissinger go at the behest of Nixon in terms of secret bombing of Cambodia? What kind of influence did Kissinger have in decision-making?
That's a great question, and the relationship evolved. It was not a static one, you know, from beginning to end. I think what the evidence that I have seen, and I always do try to keep an open mind because there are so many records and tapes that have yet to be opened, is that really this was Nixon's idea. I mean, Nixon wrote about it in the influential Journal of Foreign Affairs in 1967, that we have to look beyond, it's called Asia After Vietnam. We have to look at Asia and look beyond our period of involvement in a war, and when you look beyond the war, you have to reconcile the relationship with China. And early in the Nixon White House period, Kissinger said, you know, this man is crazy. You know, how are we ever going to do that? How are we going to change 25 years of diplomacy? So I think they both gravitated toward the other over the coming years. It was clearly Nixon's idea, but Kissinger was clearly the implementer of that idea.
Mm-hmm. And what about these tapes? Why are there so many yet to be released so that we can hear them?
Well, I think you look at all presidencies, and here we have President Obama planning for his presidential library to be in Chicago. He will go through a similar process. And this is why it takes decades for presidential records to come out. Some are marked for national security restrictions. Some, for example, we now have a Supreme Court justice vacancy. And surely the White House is actively vetting candidates right now. And what happens to those who are being considered but are not chosen? That's an example of a restriction for privacy. That has to be honored for some, perhaps the life of the individual. There are other discussions of behind the scenes of the Supreme Court, what's going on in the prosecution of a case. So there are lots of types of restrictions that are applied to presidential records. And the Nixon tapes, of course, are the verbatim presidential record. We've never had it before, never had it since. As far as we know, no other presidents record. So these are kind of unique in kind of the quantity of restrictions that they have. And surely, as a historian, I hope with enough passage of time, they'll all be out. But we have a ways to go.
We're welcoming phone calls. We have two guests this hour. Our first is Professor Luke Nichter. He is an associate professor of history at Texas A&M University and a noted expert on the Nixon tapes. And, of course, Kissinger is in those tapes. He's the author of Richard Nixon in Europe, The Reshaping of the Postwar Atlantic World, and his current book, Project is on Henry Cabot Lodge, Jr. He is the co-author of the New York Times bestseller, The Nixon Tapes, 1971-72, also a sequel volume, The Nixon Tapes, 1973. We're welcoming phone calls. Our conversation is mostly centering on this debate between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders on Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State during the time of the presidency of Richard Nixon. Clinton said that she's friends with him and he has called her and given her advice and she's listened to him because he has a good sense of foreign leaders and a sense of history, and she was proud to defend particularly his policies with China. Sanders, on the other hand, said that cited the secret war and bombing of Cambodia and what happened as a result of that, and was proud to say that Henry Kissinger was not a friend of his. And we thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to talk about Henry Kissinger, why he came up, whether or not he is considered a sage or a pariah. We welcome your phone calls, and here's how you can reach this conversation. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The legacy of Henry Kissinger. This hour of the program, 800-486-8655 is our number. John in Milwaukee, hello.
I want one sentence about John F. Kennedy because his name came up. And if those of us in the organized labor movement are looking for another John F. Kennedy type, then that is because we believed in what he preached and how he worked his presidency. He treated us with respect and fairness, something that we have not received from any president since then. Now as to Mr. Kissinger, pariah. Those of us that go around to the factories that have been mothballed or the sites that have been demolished in southeastern Wisconsin certainly blame Mr. Kissinger primarily for their demise, because it was his opening to China, along with the corporation bosses in the United States, that sent all of that work to the Far East Basin. And we are sitting here in this nation with 45 million unionized jobs lost since the end of Mr. Kissinger's reign as Secretary of State. And we trace all of the misery and the butchery back to Mr. Kissinger himself.
Professor Nichter.
Well, I think right there, I think the caller has articulated one of the key points of the race this year, whether on the Democratic side or on the Republican side. I think I would just, just beyond my expertise, but I think I would just say, as someone who grew up not in southeastern Wisconsin, but in northwest Ohio, in the Toledo, Ohio area, the child of two union employees in a blue-collar family, I know exactly what you're saying. Ohio was one of the first states into the recession, was one of the last states out of the recession. And I think I would just say that China has lost a lot of jobs, too, and it's the problems in the Chinese economy today that are causing ripples on our own economy. So the whole effect of globalization has affected us all, you know, in unpredictable ways. But I do think the caller has pointed out one of the key issues of the campaign this year.
Thank you, John, for the call. I want you to respond, if you wouldn't mind, to the next guest's comments about Henry Kissinger, which are pretty strong. Todd Gitlin says he rose to power as a banal, obsequious, and sometimes hysterical cold warrior whose leap into the front ranks of America's higher courtiers was launched by his advocacy of preparation for a nuclear war in Central Europe, a limited one.
Well, I saw these columns, this kind of pariah, this pariah debate, a sage or pariah in the New York Times when it was published a few days ago. And there is, you know, he highlights a lot of truths in a lot of the key criticisms against Kissinger over the last 40 years. I will say that I don't, you know, Kissinger, though, if you examine his record of the 1950s, he was not a radical by any means. I mean, he really made his name with his late 1950s book, Nuclear Weapons and Foreign Policy, which was a criticism of Eisenhower, of Republican Eisenhower foreign policy. And it was such a good criticism, actually, that Eisenhower made it required reading of all of his staff. And in that book, Kissinger goes to great lengths to criticize the use of nuclear weapons. One of the famous quotes of Kissinger's about nuclear weapons is, it doesn't matter if the warheads are filled with talcum powder. We don't actually plan to use them. And as long as we elect rational leaders of either party, and as long as the Russians are rational, neither actually plans to use these things in the arm race. And Kissinger advocated for spending less money on these, even though we have to build them. So I think Kissinger's rise was pretty pragmatic. This is somebody who, in 1968, worked for Rockefeller before Nixon and positioned himself to get a job in the White House, whether a Democrat or a Republican was elected. So I think actually Kissinger's history has been as a pretty pragmatic a politician.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Fred next in Green Bay. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Catherine. Your initial question was regarding Clinton and Sanders. And I think the difference between the two regarding Mr. Kissinger is that Mr. Sanders is attempting to make Mrs. Clinton look like she's in the past. She's the old guard and is looking to the past, whereas she's looking to the future and he's presenting a positive picture. The only concern I have with that type of a position, if that's in fact what he's doing, is if we don't learn from the past, we're condemned to the future. And I think we can learn a lot from what has happened with our past presidents and our past secretaries of state. such as Mr. Kissinger.
Mm-hmm. So you would agree with what our guest has written, that a former Secretary of State or a Secretary of State may well want to seek and weigh advice from all of her predecessors, including shameful ones, even though Kissinger may not be a particularly shameful one, or some think that he is. But you should meet with everybody.
Absolutely. If we don't gain that kind of information and that knowledge, we're condemning ourselves to the future.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Professor Nichter?
I think that's a pretty better stated than how I stated it the first time around. And I think I would also add one more point, that I think all Americans, you know, we expect of all the government departments, the State Department is supposed to be one of the ones that's the least politicized. The Secretary of State generally doesn't campaign politically. I mean, you also wouldn't expect the Attorney General to be involved in a re-election campaign. So I think what Sanders was saying was clearly a political statement meant for political consumption. It was very effective. Former Secretary Clinton's position was very different. Speaking as a former Secretary of State understands the need to consult as widely as possible about the world, because the world itself is full of a lot of different opinions.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think Sanders brought this up politically? I mean, what would be the reason for it?
Well, it's very smart politics. It's the transformation of Senator Sanders has been amazing, because as someone who was a former staffer in the Speaker's office and in the House of Representatives, you know, he was generally, I wouldn't quite say he was an anonymous senator, but he's far more popular now than he ever was during most of his Senate career, except for in the past few years since his filibuster. And he's articulated these positions that have just resonated. Mm-hmm. In a sense, you know, one column I read was, these, in essence, many of his diehard supporters are those who supported Senator Obama, but think that his presidency didn't end up liberal enough, you know, however we define that. It's brilliant politics, and I think there are very few ways to make an effective dig at Secretary Clinton. I mean, no one else in the field on either side has as much experience as she does. But yet this critique of Senator Sanders is one of the ways that he can do that.
Mm-hmm. Fred, thanks so much for your call. Jake in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi, good afternoon, Kathleen. I wanted to ask your guest, in his opinion, based on the knowledge we already have about Kissinger and Nixon, did ex-President Nixon and former Secretary Kissinger commit war crimes and crimes against humanity in Vietnam?
Well, there's evidence on both sides, and it's always hard to make these kind of judgments because, you know, as I'm doing my research now for my biography, the first one on Henry Cabot Lodge, who was our ambassador in Saigon and had a heck of a lot to do with getting us into that war under President Kennedy. You know, we are missing a lot of records. I'm planning to go over to Vietnam and do research in the Vietnamese archives, and a lot of those records have disappeared. So I think there is, you know, evidence to make that claim. I think that it is destructive, though, if we start to go down and at some point, you know, most presidents become involved in a conflict or a war. We haven't had a declared war since World War II. If we start to actually pursue these charges against someone, whether it's Kissinger, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, at some point we start pursuing these charges against a lot of people. And I don't know what that does, you know, to our country and to the Constitution, you know, if we start doing that. So I think it is a fine line. It's a good question. But I wonder how dangerous a world we will live in if we do pursue these kinds of charges against all those whom it may be appropriate to do so.
What records are missing?
Well, I mean, we have a lot of Vietnam records are still classified today. 700 hours of tapes. In terms of documenting the war crimes, if we're calling those against the Vietnamese, as many as 1.5 million died over there, millions more wounded, right. Plenty of bombs still on the ground, unexploded ordnance today. Many of the Vietnamese records don't exist, providing their side of the story if we were to pursue war crimes in an international criminal court or somewhere. So it's a very complicated issue.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for being with us. I hope you'll join us again.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. Our guest the first half hour of the show, Professor Luke Nichter. He is an associate professor of history at Texas A&M University. He is the author, co-author of the Nixon Tapes, 1971 to 72, also 1973. He's a founding executive producer of C-SPAN's American History TV, and he's currently working on a book on Henry Cabot Lodge, Jr. We are continuing the same conversation with a different guest now. Todd Gitlin is joining us. Todd is professor of sociology and journalism at Columbia University, author of The 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage, and a forthcoming novel, The Opposition. He wrote an opinion piece that we've referenced that appeared in the New York Times. Kissinger was a courier, a courtier to atrocity, and we'll be welcoming Todd's thoughts and your further phone calls on this issue, whether or not his advice should be sought as a sage or whether Henry Kissinger is a pariah. Todd Gitlin, thank you very much for being with us.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Pleasure to be here.
Well, you didn't mince any words. You were in the article, said he rose to power as a banal, obsequious, and sometimes hysterical cold warrior whose leap into the front ranks was launched by his advocacy of preparation for a nuclear war in Central Europe. So, carry on from there.
Well, I haven't lived as long as I've lived to mince words about Henry Kissinger. I'm not going to start now. What can I say? The man has so much atrocity on his hands with such impunity and such intellectual dishonesty and a train of lies behind and lies about his lies. I don't know where to start. And I just want to underscore that I ended my piece by saying that he should be consulted.
Mm-hmm.
His Rolodex should be consulted, for sure. I would not consult him on a moral question, but if it's a question of, who's who in the Chinese hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
He may well know something. After all, many powerful people pay him unreleased sums of money in order to advise and represent them, and presumably he knows something. So what I object to, actually, more than Hillary's consulting him in that, is, first of all, the revelation that they're good friends, which, if David Korn...
I saw that article.
...is
yeah.
right, then they vacation with Kissinger, which I find, I have to say, completely disgusting, just on a plain human level. But I do think that it's a matter of coming to terms with, honestly, with the appalling ideological, intellectual, and moral calamity that afflicted America for so many years, and continues to do so, that Kissinger should be regarded as a sage is a sort of collective act of self-immolation on the part of the press corps. I was tickled or nauseated or both for years whenever he was on Nightline with Ted Koppel. He was always Mr. Kissinger. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Dr. Kissinger.
Yes, yes.
Dr. Kissinger.
Right.
Many people appear on that show, but he had the august presence, and it's simply appalling. One of the benefits of reading Neil Ferguson's rather sycophantic first volume of biography of Kissinger is you get to read excerpts from some of his writings at a time when he was already being groomed as a sage, or I should say grooming himself, because he hopped from protege to Nelson Rockefeller, to protege to Jack Kennedy, to protege to Nixon, to Lyndon Johnson, and then to Nixon, all along on the strength of a very impoverished intellectual view of the world. The reason I underscore the word banal is it wasn't actually terribly interesting about his mind. He was a straight cold warrior. And some of what put him on the charts intellectually, I think this is something he outgrew, although very quietly. He published a book in 1957 called Nuclear Weapons and Foreign Policy,
mm-hmm.
which was, believe it or not, a bestseller. This is when he was on call to Nelson Rockefeller, and in which he advocated that America prepare for a so-called limited nuclear war on the continent of Europe. That would have been a war in which the weapon of choice, the so-called tactical nuclear weapon, would have been of the scale of 500 kilotons, in other words, 25 Hiroshima bombs worth each. And that was considered a plausible, rather, striking but not out of the ballpark proposal. That was the world he came from. It was the world that was saved from nuclear war by the skin of its teeth during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And that was his achievement on the basis of which he was found to be useful by four presidents and found to be an exemplar of American value. I think the reviewer in the New York Times Book Review said he was one of the greatest Americans. I mean, consult him, fine. But the apotheosis is egregious.
Hmm. Let's center on Vietnam for a moment. And in your piece in the Times, you talk about the American bombing campaign kept secret from Americans. Of Cambodia, you write, became one of the most heavily bombarded countries in history. And then we had the Khmer Rouge came in, which Senator Sanders referenced. For Kissinger, you say Cambodia was a sideshow, its people expendable in the great game of large nations. Ooh.
Well, Sideshow is the title of a book by William Shawcross, an English journalist, about that bombing campaign. And Shawcross is by no means a left-winger, but he makes an overwhelming case that not only did Kissinger basically run the whole bombing campaign out of his hip pocket, I mean, even choosing targets, but
he
that
did, really.
Kissinger was quite cavalier about it, never interested in the so-called collateral damage, has never really owned up to it. The lies are manifest, and the second edition of Shawcross's book is worth consulting for those who want chapter and verse. Because when he was challenged on when Kissinger had a flunky write a challenge to Shawcross's book, and then Shawcross reviews the challenge in meticulous detail. So what he did in Cambodia was atrocious, but the repeated and continuing lies about it are all the more revelatory of the man's character.
Why would Senator Bernie Sanders bring up Henry Kissinger?
Sure. I mean, he brought it. He didn't bring it up first. Hillary brought it up.
Right.
It came up, but somebody asked about it. I can't remember what led up to it. But I mean, it made sense that Bernie Sanders brought it up, because if there's anything that suggests that Hillary belongs to an old and fortunately gone era, that will do as a symbolic note on which to hang that criticism on. So I suspect he knew what he was doing, and he did know what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, you're a professor, do you think his youthful supporters understood the backstory?
Understood what? Sorry?
The backstory. Do they remember Vietnam? Do they study Vietnam?
I often wonder when anybody remembers anything.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are other parts of the story that I'm sure people, even if they know that Kissinger was National Security Advisor and Secretary of State under Nixon, they don't know about the wiretaps. They don't know about the efforts to punish dissidents within the State Department. They don't know, and I mentioned this only briefly in the article because I didn't have room, they don't know about his role in colluding in the Pakistan military dictatorship assault on the East Pakistan, which became Bangladesh. They don't know about the American consular officials who spoke of America's moral bankruptcy in the face of atrocities and reign of terror. These were people who were trying to change the American policy from within the Foreign Service. They don't know about Kissinger's, sprinkling of holy water on Pinochet after the in the period in the way up to and then through the coup d'etat in Chile. I was speaking the other day with a friend of mine who knows Latin America very well, spent a lot of time down there, and a subject of Kissinger came up, and she said everybody in Latin America knows what role he played in Chile. Everyone in Latin America knows what role he played in sanctifying the dirty war in Argentina. So he's well known around the world as an apparatchik of mass terror. But Americans, I think, tend not to know. And because so many people have devoted so many years to refurbishing his reputation, shining it up, and being dazzled by his apparent face-to-face wit, he's gotten away with it. He's gotten away with this august, and I would say also polarizing reputation. That is, half the country, I think, sees him as a central lieutenant in a disastrous sequence of policy thought and moves and events over a period of decades. And the other half of the country thinks that he's a kind of kindly old gent with a cute accent.
Right. Todd Gitlin is our guest. We're debating whether or not the advice of Henry Kissinger should be sought by a future president or Secretary of State, for that matter. Was he an important and good figure in foreign policy, or was he destructive? We're hearing different viewpoints this hour, and our conversation was prompted by this. You know, I thought it seemed a little bit out of the blue. I know Hillary Clinton had mentioned seeking the advice of Henry Kissinger, I think, in an earlier Democratic debate, but Bernie Sanders certainly brought it up in the Democratic debate here in Milwaukee, and we thought, well, let's do a show on Henry Kissinger and whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing that Bernie Sanders said, I am not his friend, I'm proud not to be his friend. And Secretary Clinton talked about seeking his advice and proud of the fact that she was his friend. So who is this guy? Friend to some and not a friend to others. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. Todd Gitlin is our guest, professor of sociology and journalism at Columbia University, author of The 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage. He wrote an opinion piece on Henry Kissinger that appeared in the New York Times recently. Kissinger was a courtier to atrocity. More phone calls from you in a minute. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to one of many phone calls for Todd. Mary in Washburn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been on a while. Had kind of hoped to talk to your first guest, but I agree with your second guest in his statement about who you choose to be your friend or define as your friend when it comes to foreign policy. To me, the huge mistake that Hillary Clinton made in if she was at all anticipating a presidential run in her recent book that she wrote and in two debates where she mentioned Henry Kissinger. Was to portray him as not just someone who had served in the foreign service and whose mind she wanted to pick, which I think many people would find understandable, but portrayed him as a friend, and not just as a friend, but as a mentor. That is the word that grabbed hold of me in her book and in the first debate where she mentioned him. I think it was just extremely poor judgment. I can't believe, the people who want her to win, her people, public relations wise, it was a mistake. Of all the people she could have mentioned, of all that would have bolstered her credentials, it seems so poor. Or it was either that, or it's that she truly operates in such a political bubble that she thinks we're all just kind of stupid out here and would not know the difference. We would just think, oh, that's great. One other point. When you talk about young people, would they even know who this guy is? I do want to tell you that the night of the debate in Milwaukee, there was the most interesting line of chatter and commentary on Facebook among Cambodian and Vietnamese students at UWM.
Oh, interesting.
Who were just profoundly excited and grateful to tears on the part of one person that this came up, that Bernie Sanders responded so forcefully. They know that history. These young folks studying here in the U.S., they know that history. And when you ask Kathleen why in the world would Bernie bring this up? It was more a question of why, truly to me, why would Hillary
have initially brought it up?
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Mary. Good points. Professor Gitlin.
Yeah, I'm delighted to hear that story. I must say it made chills run down my spine.
Hmm.
You know, impunity is one question, and you can't really be serious about your history if everybody operates with impunity and people are allowed to forget and fudge. But the other thing I would say is that many people who are liberal, progressive types in the Democratic Party are actually worried about Hillary Clinton's foreign policy. The odds are, I would hazard my own educated guess, that she and Bernie, despite the differences, are actually quite close together on whatever kind of domestic policy would emerge from their administrations. But on foreign policy, there's a fairly radical difference. And by name-checking Kissinger, she, I think, simply aggravates the questions that are asked about her political judgment.
Mm-hmm. And I'll remember what Mary said about Cambodian students and Vietnamese students. Really,
yeah, I will not
forget
that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary, so much for your call. Bob in Green Bay. Hi, Bob.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to agree with the previous caller that was talking about the devastating effect that Kissinger had with union jobs. And, you know, it seems like history is repeating itself, because if you look at the backers of both Hillary and Bernie, you know, we're back in the same boat. You know, globalization is becoming king, and I know George Soros is backing Bernie, which not many people are talking about, but he advocates, you know, this globalized market, which isn't really conducive to jobs, and I was just wondering how you felt about that.
Is Soros backing Bernie?
George Soros is.
I wasn't aware of that. Todd, you want to respond?
Well, I have one reaction. Way back when Kissinger was in the government, he was quoted at some point as saying that he didn't really understand economic questions. They weren't his purview. I mean, he was, he's a historian of Europe, really modern and modern Europe. Now, subsequently, he's positioned himself as a master, an expert, a consultant. I gather that the names of the clients at Kissinger Associates are secret. But presumably one thing he does advise on is trade matters. So I suspect this is a matter, again, just an educated guess, somebody who doesn't understand much about economics but has acquired the coloration that enables him to present himself as a knowledgeable consultant for high rollers, for people who play in the stratosphere of international political economic relations. And they may actually know, so that he not only has his Kissingerian aura, but now by virtue of the names of those he consults, he becomes, you know, a sort of embodiment of Davos man, let's say, sort of man who knows everybody, which substitutes for man who knows anything.
I really like that point, and I'll also like to say that, you know, I don't see him as a sage or, you know, sinner, so to say. I think we're all a little bit of both, and I think that we should all keep that in mind when we, you know, try to label people.
Thanks very much for your call. We had Dan from Milwaukee send an email. Do you know, Professor Gitlin, if Kissinger and Poindexter have a connection?
I do not.
Thanks for your call, Bob. We go to John in Lake Superior. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine, thank
Good.
You. A beautiful day on Lake Superior, ice
Great.
Fishing. Briefly, I just don't feel that there was a full accounting for the POWs, and Kissinger was, and his administration were in a rush to get a peace treaty signed, and I think that they abandoned some of our POWs in Vietnam.
Professor Gitlin.
I beg to disagree. There's no evidence of any POW still in custody, despite many efforts, expensive efforts, to locate them. I believe this is a myth that many people believe sincerely, that is a way of perpetuating the war as an act in the imagination. That is to say, we didn't really lose. They took our guys. There was something underhanded. I think it's a long-running and amazingly persistent belief that attempts to, or that has the effect of erasing the shamefulness of the war and the fact that we lost it.
Mm-hmm. You do give Kissinger credit in your piece in the Times for helping to arrange Nixon's triumphal visit, as you put it, to Beijing. He deserves much credit.
Well, that is the generally accepted. I have no independent information, so that is the generally accepted understanding of his role in the turn to China. Yeah.
Is it interesting and is it unusual when you mentioned all of the presidents that he wanted to work for, all the people from many political persuasions that he wanted to work for, did he fit his political philosophy to just be in step with whoever the president happened to be, or could you label him as a conservative or a liberal or a something?
He was a Cold Warrior with a black-white image system. Anything that could be done to stop communists anywhere was acceptable. By the way, in apropos of his conversation with Pinochet in 76, he left a memo of this conversation in which he says that he said to Pinochet, and I quote, "You are a victim of all left-wing groups around the world, and that your greatest sin was that you overthrew a government that was going communist." This to a dictator who killed thousands, tortured many more. That was that his worldview was so consistent through Rockefeller, Kennedy, briefly with Johnson, and then with Nixon, that the differences among them in policy would have dwindled to the vanishing point. So that is to say that he was at the center of an intellectual system that they all shared in.
And
he would have served all of them, I think. By the way, Nixon he had no respect for, and he said publicly, later embarrassed, on the brink of the Nixon election, that he thought Nixon was a terrible choice. And if Nixon had been more, if Google had been around and they'd paid more attention to that comment, he might not have ended up in the White House. He knew what he wanted. What he wanted was this sort of old style, throw your weight around politics, and all of them were willing to play it.
And would you go as far as Bernie Sanders did when he said Henry Kissinger was one of the most destructive secretaries of state in the modern history of this country?
Oh, I would certainly. It's indisputable. I mean, I would add that he did a great deal of his damage when he had not yet become Secretary of State, and he was the National Security Advisor, and later he became both. He had a little skirmish going with Secretary of State Rogers, who he thought was wimpy, and eventually got Nixon to get rid of him. Yes, I mean, it's hard for me to think of we could think of Dean Rusk and his role in the Vietnam War under Kennedy and Johnson, but that he would run a close second. But I think, and maybe we could go back to the 40s and think about James Burns, who poured the flames on the Cold War. Wrong metaphor, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But he certainly, and of course, you know. By the time we get up into the Bush era, you know, we have several to choose from. But he would rank first on my list in terms of destructiveness.
Yeah.
And destructiveness not just of people and of territory, but also of the reputation of the United States of America. You could not take seriously, if you were living in another country, that America's most decent impulses spoke through him.
Todd Gitlin, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot for
Todd,
having.
Yeah, our pleasure. Todd is professor of sociology and journalism at Columbia University, author of The 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage, and a forthcoming novel, The Opposition. And thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this very interesting hour, and to Kendra Smith, our new intern for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. George Soros gave to the Clinton campaign. I just wanted to clear that up. That's, to the best of our knowledge, what we've discovered. Stay with us. More to come.